Our good friend Jake Novak is with us live via telephone, in addition to being the new executive director at Beitar USA. Jake, as you know, is an amazing commentator, analyst on so many things, and he had an outspoken tweet regarding Senator Schumer, one of our favorite topics, unfortunately, or I should say one of our favorite targets, unfortunately, very recently, and I asked him to join us for that and to discuss some other things as well. Jake Novak, welcome back to JM in the AM.
Thanks for having me, Al. Good to hear from you, as usual.
I appreciate that. What a disappointment he is in reference to Senator Schumer, and sometimes I have to keep in mind that that the majority of Jews in this country likely agree with him on most things, which is so disappointing, and that's probably a completely separate topic. But is that the real reason that he's able to get away with what he does and not make public statements against anti-Semitic attacks and condemn the Prime Minister of Israel from the halls of the United States Congress? I mean, is that the reason that he's able to make such outrageous statements and come out with such crazy opinions, because the majority of Jews and people in this country likely agree with him?
No, not at all. The reason is very simple. It's very simple reason. It has nothing to do with the fact that Chuck Schumer is Jewish. It has everything to do with the fact that he is a career politician in a rock solid, safe Senate seat that he'll never lose. And that's how you get power in this country in Congress. You just keep getting reelected. The incumbency advantage just keeps snowballing, which is why it's very important that the folks defeated Jamal Bowman in last night, because he was already a second term. And once he got his third term, it would have been basically impossible to ever unseat him. So that's the biggest reason. It's got nothing to do with the fact of him being Jewish. So when you look at some of these members of Congress, whether they're Nancy Pelosi or Mitch McConnell, it doesn't really matter what party. Once you're in Congress for all those years and you're in a seat that will never be lost, then you get to it's kind of like your interest compounds daily in your political power.
I'm just trying to understand what you're saying. And it means at that point, you basically could do what's best for yourself. In other words, if it's better for you to come out against Netanyahu or better for you to ignore anti-Semitic attacks, you can go ahead and behave that way, because the only person you have to worry about is yourself and your own advancement, because as you just said, you're ensconced in there for life, basically.
Well, I would actually say, no, you don't even have to do what's good for you. I don't think it was good for Schumer to come out against Netanyahu. It showed a tremendous weakness on the part of older Democrats that they were falling to these far left progressives. And it was a huge victory for them and a loss of it. So in other words, they don't even have to worry about themselves anymore, because, again, as long as they're breathing, they're going to be reelected. So they'll do what they think they need to do for now. Even if and they won't think too much about their long term, the pluses or minuses of what they've just done. It's they're actually reckless for themselves. You know, it's funny. Even if they were being really, really selfish for themselves, they would be better than they are now.
Right.
They're incredibly just off the rails.
So the extreme left takes over the party, or at least in a way has a tremendous influence now on the Democratic Party. And he simply is trying his best to keep them happy. And if they didn't exist, if there was no squad, he might behave differently.
Right. But, you know, when you have a career like this and you're a person like this for so many years, and eventually there is nothing left. To me, the biggest sin of Chuck Schumer isn't just the wicked things he's done to the Jewish community and to America. The biggest sin is that this is a guy who has been in Congress for all this time. He had a tremendous education. He's a Harvard educated guy. And let me tell you something. In the many times I've met with him, there's nothing to the man. Garnished but garnished. There is zero there. I don't think the man has an intellectual thought. I don't think that there's no erudition to the guy. Like, for example, Mitch McConnell, love him or hate him, there's an evil genius kind of thing going on there. The guy is very smart. The guy has an overall strategy. He has some very strong philosophies that come out very clearly. I don't agree with all of them. The man is quite clever. There's nothing there. Chuck Schumer is just a glad hander. He's just smiling. He's the same guy who sat next to me at my Yeshiva Flatbush High School graduation on the stage 36 years ago this month and just waved like a clown when they said his name and jumped up and down like a silly boy. He was a congressman then. I thought to myself, like, what is it? This is a serious graduation. We just had a speech from a Holocaust survivor. We just had a speech from some of the original Zionists who fought in the wars. And this guy thinks this is a children's carnival. And I thought, that's the same man now. That's the biggest sin of Chuck Schumer.
Jake Novak's with us live via telephone. By the way, I mean, I don't know what your general position is, but the political landscape today has changed my mind about term limits. I always used to say, you know what? We have a choice. Go ahead. Vote forever you want. It's a democratic free country. But now, because of what you described, about, especially about the incumbency when it comes to the Senate and the House, and, of course, many local offices, I just think it's a great argument for term limits.
Yeah, and it was one of the things that I suggested Donald Trump do when he was president. I think the two things he really should have focused on in his final year in office would have been cutting off foreign aid. I'm talking about charity to country, not like, you know, military support right to Israel. Foreign aid is actually Israel doesn't get foreign aid. The legal definition of foreign aid is free money. No questions asked. Here's the money. We give that to a lot of countries. And the second one was term limits. Not that I thought he would actually be able to get that done in a year, but just to get that conversation going. I mean, I don't even know if Trump realizes how many people vote for him or voted for him, especially in 2016, who hadn't voted in an election in a long time, older people. So the alienated folks will really like the idea of term limits. That's very important. And a lot of people say, like, well, that'll just create more power for the corporations and the people who fund elections. That's like saying they don't already have that kind of power. But that's also overblown. The corporations with all their money couldn't tip even an election for dog catcher if the voters weren't actually believing in it. You know, that doesn't happen.
So with that in mind, the Bowman-Latimer election, you would say, had some real substance to it. It wasn't just pouring money into an effort to get him out of office.
Oh, yeah. Oh, for crying out loud, $14 million could tip a congressional election in America just on that basis of the money. Then out of the pocket change of George Soros and a couple of corporations, they would own every single. I mean, it's just, right, it's just a ludicrous argument.
That's true.
You have to have some people. And by the way, this goes for some of the George Soros DEAs, too, and all that. As much as his money played a huge role in it, the fact is, the people in some of these cities were absolutely wanted to defund the police, absolutely wanted to see crime rise and have their local criminals excused. They wouldn't have done it just for whatever money they would have gotten to run. I mean, honestly, these people really do hate the police. And I don't think that they're a majority, but when you have these small elections, they're the majority of the people who show up on election day. So that's the way it goes.
So if your theory or analysis is correct, and, you know, incumbency, especially third time around, you know, really keeps you embedded in that seat forever, then we're never getting rid of AOC. Would you say that?
Yeah, I don't know why people think they're going to do that. She's not going to be. I mean, the only thing you can hope for is that she stretches too far. If she tries to run for the Senate, which is possible, then you have a chance to get rid of her. But that's it. You know, otherwise, she will have that job for life. I have no doubt in my mind that she will have that job for life.
And that's another reason
we need to be prepared for that.
And that's another reason why Schumer, again, does whatever the squad, you know, whatever he thinks will keep the squad happy, because really the only person that can give him any type of competition right now would be her, right?
No, even she wouldn't give him competition. I really wish that were true. I wish that he was more worried about himself, but he's just not. He doesn't even have to care about himself. I mean, this is kind of like, I guess the best analogy for your listeners to understand this is like a drug addict. This is a drug addict who's never going to get cut off from the drugs, who is never going to have that problem and is not going to die from the drugs.
But I thought he is doing their bidding when he comes out against Netanyahu publicly.
Yes, he's doing their bidding, but not because it's good for him. He's just doing their bidding because he thinks that this will just help him avoid maybe a problem. Right. But he's wrong in that. In other words, I think any even young staffer could say, no, you know, look at the polls. It's the moderates where the Democratic Party's having a problem with. It's the John Fettermans of the world. This is true for Joe Biden as well. Joe Biden catering to the far left with stuff he's doing with Israel is a mistake in the polls. He's not behind among the far left. It's the moderates who care about Israel that are worried about Joe Biden. If he would be more pro-Israel, if Schumer would be more pro-Israel, and if Biden would be more pro-Israel, it would do better for them. So they're actually not even doing their own good. It's kind of a head scratcher. But again, when you're in that much of a safety situation, you do stupid things.
Do you disagree with the expectations that the right wing media is laying out for tomorrow night's debate? They're basically saying that if, you know, the current president could put two thoughts together, that'll be an accomplishment. Now, you and I know that he's going to be, you know, fine in that area. So isn't it setting the bar very low for Joe Biden?
It is. And it's a huge mistake. I think that they should be setting the bar at how many falsehoods is he going to say. Is he going to say his son died in Iraq again? Is he going to say that he taught law at University of Pennsylvania again? Would there be, I mean, if I were a moderator in that debate, that would be one of my first questions. Mr. President, when did your son Beau die? Mr. President, tell us about the course. Why do you continue to lie about the courses you say you taught at University of Pennsylvania? Are you cognitively declined, or are you continuing to lie to the American public? And they can ask questions like that of Donald Trump too, by the way. That's fine. Instead, you're going to have moderators that do stupid questions.
Don't worry, they will, because the first two questions are likely going to be election fraud at January 6th. So,
I would assume
that hasn't going to start. Any other predictions or any other way you would prepare these two candidates for tomorrow night?
Well, I'd rather prepare your listeners. You know, this is a very problematic debate format. There's no live audience, which bothers me tremendously. I was a television executive news producer for 30 years. With no live audience, that means that the technical crew in the control room and the executive producers in that control room are going to be the most powerful people in America for that hour. People are worried about them cutting off Donald Trump's mic. That's not what I'm worried about. They're going to cut off Joe Biden's mic if he starts going off the reservation. They could switch the camera off of him or onto Donald Trump at a certain point. And there'll be no live audience or live unedited feed for the American people to know what's really going on. This should never have been agreed to. It's really quite egregious. I hate debate formats of all kinds, even if they do have a live audience. The debate formats we've had in this country for the last 50, 60 years are a joke. They're an anti-intellectual exercise in stupidity. But this is beyond the pale. No live audience. It's called the technical director or the switcher. The camera switcher and the mic operator will be two of the most powerful people in America. And I want everyone to watch very clearly. If you see something that doesn't seem right, if something gets cut off, if something just doesn't look, you know, kosher, you know, make a note of it, because this is a huge problem. This really feels like 1984 kind of stuff.
When you combine the seven toss-up states, do you think they're still neck and neck?
Yeah, I do. I still think, though, that the issue is the Republicans are not prepared for what you and I experienced in real time in November of 2020. I was on the show with you the morning after Election Day, and those numbers were coming in even as you and I were talking. Of suspicious vote ballot dumps that had come in the middle, you know, not in the middle of the night is a misnomer, 2, 3, 4 in the morning. I am not convinced by any stretch that the Republicans have prepared yet to combat that again. Pennsylvania is increasingly problematic. And by the way, Pennsylvania should be a very interesting us. For the first time in my lifetime, there is a swing state in the election where the Jewish vote counts, and it's Pennsylvania, because Pennsylvania swings on the suburbs of Philadelphia and Pittsburgh, and that's where the Jews are. The Jewish vote actually counts in this election because there's one swing state where they could swing it. And that's a state where you can send in a mail-in ballot with no ID verification. And there's been a weak legal challenge against it that is lost. So until I get some confidence in the Republicans' efforts to combat, and by the way, mail-in ballots should never be allowed. They are not a secret ballot. And please note, I'm not even accusing anyone of fraud here. What I'm accusing here is something that's actually not an accusation. It's an established fact. A mail-in ballot is not a secret ballot. I don't know who's seen it. I don't know if a husband has put a pressure on a wife to fill it out or vice versa. I don't know what happened in the post office. This is why we have secret ballots. This is why you learned in fifth grade that if you don't have a secret ballot, it's not a legitimate Democratic election. There should never be a mail-in ballot allowed, even for our military. Let them vote in a secure laptop in the PX on the base. That's how it should be done.
Yeah, I'm surprised.
But unfortunately, we have a problem. We have a problem with this election.
I'm actually surprised we got to this point, frankly. By the way, the Fetterman effect could really help Biden in Pennsylvania, agreed or not, because now the Jewish community in general has moved more toward him than away from him.
I think that they like Fetterman more. I think that there is a decent split among people who are happy with Fetterman who know that they have to vote against Joe Biden. So I don't know. I hope hopefully he'll bring more people to the polls who will think, yeah, let's get more John Fetterman and less of Joe Biden.
You're the new executive director of Beitar USA, Jake Novak. What can you tell us about the organization and how it's been over the last few years?
Well, as you know, Beitar was founded 101 years ago by Zev Jabotinsky, the Zionist self-determination, Jewish defense philosopher and doer. This has a personal connection for me. My grandfather and my great uncle, his youngest brother in a large family in Lithuania, were charter members, founding members in 1923. They were the only two members, not coincidentally, they were the only two members of my family in Europe who survived or escaped the Holocaust. Beitar is extremely strong in Israel and has been a continuing force in Israel. It's a youth movement. It's a social group. It's obviously a political group. Many of Israel's politicians grew up in the movement. It used to have many chapters here in the United States. It went dormant in the 1990s. it's past time for it to be reestablished. We realize now we need it desperately. And our real target audience are college-age kids, slightly older. Obviously, everyone is invited to join. BayTarUSA.org is the website, and you can find out more about it. But it is about self-defense. Us complaining, us crying, us asking for the Chuck Schumers of the world to protect us is not going to work. We must project strength, as Jabotinsky advised us, and as Israel has proved many, many times before. If it weren't for Israel's strength, it would be an October 7th every day, not just in Israel, but all over the world. Yep. So don't think that Israel's strength has failed. It's a success every other day of the year. And we must have that here. And we are the first Jewish organization, by the way, to openly suggest that all Jews get armed, get legally armed, get responsibly armed, get trained. We can help you do that. We've already set up some seminars for that, and let everyone understand that strength is the only thing. Don't have to start a war. We're not looking to start anything. We're just looking to show everyone strength, and that really will help us. That is what will save us, and that's the only thing.
Information about it, it's BeitarUSA.org. Again, BeitarUSA.org. Jake Novak now in the position of their executive director. Well, I'm going to be watching this debate tomorrow night with a little bit of a different view now that opened up my eyes as to who's really in control of the proceedings. It should be a very interesting night, huh?
Yeah, and I think the debate matters. I wrote an editorial today, which I think is appearing in Newsweek, about how the debate will matter. No, it won't change anybody's vote. But people are really misinformed about how elections work in this country. It's not about changing minds. It's about enthusiasm. And if Joe Biden has a bad performance, if for whatever reason, whether it's cognitive decline or he shouts incoherently, whatever it is, that will really hurt his campaign. Those people are still going to vote for him, but they're not going to talk about him openly. They will not encourage their friends to go vote for him. And the same goes true for Donald Trump. If he's serious, if he answers the question, if he stays on the issues, if he seems focused, there are going to be a lot more people who are less shy about saying they're voting for Donald Trump. And that is what can turn an election, because it just gets more people who would have otherwise stayed home and supported the guy or they're going to go vote. It doesn't mean they've changed their mind. It means that they've been motivated. There's a big difference.
Have you decided yet what way of putting it? Do you have a way that you're leaning in terms of November, whether the House and the Senate will be Republican or Democratic?
I think that there's a very good chance that the Republicans will take the Senate. I think that there's most likely the House will remain a 2 or 3 vote majority for the Republicans, which is really a bigger problem. I'd rather have a stronger House majority if I were the Republicans than even having the Senate. The reason being that that's where all the funding bills begin in the House. And there's just very little that can be done about our deficit and even the border with such a small majority for the Republicans in the House. That said, there'll still be a chance for all that to be. I could be wrong about all of that. If you have such enthusiasm going for basically Donald Trump or Joe Biden, if there's a massive enthusiasm that's built, starting with this debate and some other factors over the next couple of months, then you could have a situation where the ballot harvesting and the mail-in ballots aren't enough to push Joe Biden over, or vice versa, they won't be needed for Joe Biden because he's already got enough enthusiasm. If that's the case, then you could see a straight for either candidate. In other words, if there's enough enthusiasm for Donald Trump to overcome the ballot harvesting, then I think they'll win good majorities in both the houses of Congress as well, and vice versa. If Joe Biden gets enough enthusiasm that it isn't these mail-in ballots that win it for him, then the Democrats will also take the two houses of Congress in addition to the White House.
Boy, if you love politics as a spectator sport, this is going to be quite a couple of months coming up.
Yeah, and we had nothing in the primaries. Remember, this is pent-up aggression here. We had no drama in the primaries whatsoever.
Right.
And I know a lot of your listeners think that Biden's going to be replaced, or it's not happening. I've been saying this for over a year. If he's breathing, he's running. Just understand that. I can't really go into all the reasons for it, but he's running. So focus on him. Don't give him the pass. If you want Joe Biden to win, great. If you don't want him to win, you're wasting your time with this discussion about him being replaced. And that's great news for him because you're letting him get away with the stuff that he's doing. Focus on him because he's going to be the guy on the ballot in November, I guarantee you.
Amazing. Thank you, Jake. Always a pleasure and good luck in the new position.
Thank you very much. Thanks, Nahum.
Jake Novak, Executive Director of Beitar USA. Go to the website, BeitarUSA.org. He's an analyst, commentator, and somebody who really knows the political landscape out there. Great to get his opinion regarding Senator Schumer, and of course, the debates tomorrow night. More coming up. You're listening to a Wednesday morning edition of JM in the AM.